for the mentally ill, having problems being pushed around by programs or by criminals or by anybody, please give me a call, you know.
Give that number again.
It is 477-0403.
477-0403. Give a call to Bear, who's interested in civil rights for those designated mentally ill or those who are having problems with programs for the mentally ill, one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
That sound fair?
Yes, it does.
Anything else you want to add at this time, Bear?
I just like to thank you for having this radio station for me to listen to, because I think it's really good being on the air and being able to talk about these kinds of issues. I personally need to get a better stereo system so I can hear the station. So I'm always at my friend's house listening to it.
Well, it is a sort of a small range, but yeah, and of course the station is really made more valuable, and it's actually worth very little unless we get calls from people like yourself who not only are interested in talking about these issues, but seem to be interested in doing something about them, which I think is, that's the acid test, you know.
Yeah, because I remember, like, when I was involved, you know, feeding the homeless back in 89, it was you, me, Sue, and Mike, and a few other people, and one of the people, or maybe two, we've lost, they've died.
Linda Edwards.
Linda Edwards. I miss her very much. I didn't know she died until a couple months afterwards. And
yeah.
I was very upset about it. But, you know, I'm just glad, you know, just to be here, and I want to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's all I got to say.
Hey, Bear, call again and, you know, keep us advised as to what's cooking, and feel free to give us your reactions on what's, you know, what's said on the air.
Okay.
And, you know, fill us in on what's not being said on the air.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thanks a lot, Robert.
Cheers, Bear.
All right, bye-bye.
And that was Bear, who used to be known as Bob, and probably still is in different places. He was instrumental in helping SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, and HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, back in those early days in 1989, when Calamity Jane Immler and Sly Shoe Sandy Loringer and Malou Pinecrone and myself and Grinning Ray Grunick, the attorney. We had lots of people who were concerned about expanding shelter and feeding people and establishing civil rights for the poor. And I have to say, one of those groups was not the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which then, under the direction of Paige Smith and Paul Lee, were still in the process of holding secret meetings, avoiding homeless people, refusing to support campouts and other demonstrations, and generally doing stuff that I trash them for, and I think appropriately so. Been pointed out to me, however, as I was pointing out to Bear, the question of a broad coalition with CCH is being proposed, as I understand it. I don't think it's actually been proposed in writing, but I've been told by Brimstone Barbara Riverwoman and Sharon Sherry Connable, two activists with SOS, Save Our Shelter, the group that supports the campers' rights from the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and also actually has largely been involved with the River Street Refugees, who is a small group of campers that's currently nesting out at Sunset Beach, and will be coming back to New Brighton Beach, I guess, in about a week. They're looking to press the county for a legal campground. Although the question arose at the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee a week ago, which is a city council shindig that I was at, as well as Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, is Barbara and SOS looking for a campground for people generally? Are they looking for a campground for simply this small group of people? And I really, that has been one of my misgivings, is that these, you know, the concerns are becoming for a small group of campers that have become kind of pet homeless or elite homeless, and instead, you know, of looking for a campground for everybody. I mean, I support that group. I saw them last night. I like them. But, I can't see just giving up the broader struggle so that you can, you know, get a payoff for a small group of people, which was what Mayor Rotkin did back in December, you know, instead of acknowledging there was a real shelter crisis and keeping open the campground through the winter for those who needed it, for the hundreds of people that could have used it. He had it become a locked field, supported Citizens Committee for the Homeless instead of pressuring them to keep their word to the campers. He essentially supported their breaking their faith, breaking their vow, breaking their promise, breaking their contract. And we know where that has led. It's, you know, one of the reasons seems to be is because CCH, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, is a favored service provider for of the city council, of the liberals, the darling of the liberals, just as Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center was the darling of Don Lane when he was the mayor. We couldn't, you know, we brought in all kinds of evidence of abusive behavior by the Free Meal towards Linda Edwards, and Don Lane wouldn't hear of it, you know. Don Lane wouldn't hear of it. I'd like to say again, as a disclaimer, that Karen Gillette has been acting quite differently in the last year or so. She has been forming contacts with activists. She has been accessible. She has been communicative. She has been even, you would say, supportive, certainly of the rights of activists to give out information. When activists have been attacked, she has moved in to quell hostility. And whereas in the past, I feel rightfully accused her of encouraging at such hostility, this is no longer the case. And I really think that there's been a significant improvement there, and I want to thank her for making that decision. I think it's a positive one. I think it's had positive effects on the community. It's not to say I'm not a critic of some of the things she does do and some of the things that she could have done and hasn't done, but I'm hopeful that we're moving in a positive direction with respect to her. Again, the problem is I'm always a critic of bureaucrats because what they're doing to me is never really sufficient, particularly when you're in a position where a lot of stuff that is ordinary human conduct is criminalized, which is the case here in Santa Cruz, sitting, spare changing, sleeping, and so forth. So if you have an interest in these questions, certainly give me a call here on the air, 427-3772, the line is open. And if I haven't been picking up the phone, it's because my eye has not been, I see the phone is ringing. Sometimes don't see it.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay, I heard River Woman said first of all, the
this is Crossroads Chris again.
Yeah.
Hi, Chris.
The supposed elite group, the 30 or 40 that made it out initially, and took the bus ride from the field to the New Brighton.
Right, in December.
The only 40 that could get on that bus were the 40 that had weathered the December, I don't know what it was, 12th or 14th storm. And then a week after that, everybody found out that had they gone up to the armory at that point, during that storm, they were not eligible to get on the bus for the New Brighton. So, and as far as I know, the SOS is trying to still obtain money on a, you know, week or bi-monthly basis to continue what the state campgrounds are allowing, which is you can by law camp if you pay for it, and they are paying.
That's true, although they will have exhausted their time at New Brighton Beach.
Well, they're already down at Sunset now, right?
Yeah, well, they're coming back to New Brighton Beach for another 2 weeks, and then they cannot be at New Brighton Beach until 1997. And they also will not be able to be at Sunset Beach until 1997, so they're looking to go to Cowell, I think, after this.
Right.
But, you know, they're essentially running around from one campground to another, perching.
And they may need some money, so you may put out Barbara's phone number or
Sharon
Connable's phone number if she's collecting fundraising
for that
group. Otherwise, my understanding is that the campground would be in the Pogonip Park. All that's necessary is a site, and it would be for a substantial number of people, like 150 people.
Right. Well, your understanding is definitely different than mine. I think, as far as I know, that's the fantasy at the moment, and has zero chance of going anywhere, according to the open air shelters last summer.
And Barbara had proposed it'd be a campground open in the, in the winter for the homeless, and then otherwise non-homeless people could use it in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That it would be another public campground. I guess
I think
restriction would be for the homeless primarily in the, I don't know then, you know.
You've given me a good idea, Chris. I think I'm going to try to call Barbara Riverwoman and see if I can get her on the air at this point. She may have a more direct statement on what, in fact, SOS is doing, and she may have her perception of what the city council is likely to be doing, too.
Okay,
and
I'll get off so you can call.
Before you go, again, I want to remind our listeners that you are currently researching questions around city council and the campground. If you want to give out your number, if you're looking for some help, they can give you a call.
Okay, let me look at it again. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
469-9527.
469-9527. And for those interested, the number of Barbara Riverwoman is 425-5939. And she's the one of the contacts for the River Street refugees. And they do indeed, they're out of firewood up there. They need firewood. That's a Sunset Beach, so.
This is like, what is this, about 12 miles out?
It's about 12 miles out. It's around Watsonville. Mm-hmm. You'll find a turnoff for Sunset Beach. And you got to kind of wind your way out there. It's quite a way, so wear a warm coat, you know.
Okay, I'll see you.
All right, thanks, Chris.
So this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our phone lines are open, 427-3772. And we are going to give a quick call to Barbara Riverwoman to see if, in fact, she has an update for us on the River Street refugees and what's cooking with them. We have a ring. But we also have an answering machine, which is means she's out. Perhaps next Friday. We've really invited her on the air time and time again, but she has neither come in. I think she may have called in once, and she has given me an interview on the phone, which I played a some of, but I haven't yet been able to. Well, I guess I've been able to. I tend to lose these tapes. I'm one of the most inefficient organizers in the world, even though I do have some loyal help from folks who've been trying to help me out. Thank you, Gloria. If you want to help out this radio operation, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, I need help. If you want to give me a call at 423-HUFF, I'll find something for you to do and make the show a little more compact, a little more perky, a little more informative. I mean, we really need to do some in-depth interview researching around questions the day or two before the air, and then we can actually bring more out to people. What else has been happening? Well, as you may know, there is the story of the man found dead under the bridge on Thursday, Greg Rateo, under the Dakota Avenue Bridge, small article in the Sentinel. Don't know much about it. If anybody does, give a call. If anybody does and you can't call the show, call me at 423-HUFF off the air. I want to give a tip of the hat to Alex, also known as Peter, who is was a loyal supporter of Food Not Bombs in San Francisco and was present during my trial when I was tried and convicted of serving free food to homeless people in 1994. That conviction for 2 months in jail is still hanging over my head, and I should be hearing from the California Supreme Court within the next 3 months. And we'll just, the question will be whether I go to jail on that or not, and I'll be keeping you, the community, advised. I talked to Keith McHenry, a Food Not Bombs activist in San Francisco, who tells me that there is a Northern California Food Not Bombs gathering planned for the presidential weekend, I guess the 16th, 17th, 18th, thereabouts, in February, in which they're going to be discussing issues of Arcata, issues of Sacramento Food Not Bombs harassment. There's been a lot of harassment at the Capitol in Sacramento. Apparently they're preparing to arrest Food Not Bombs there even now. And of course Arcata has been going after Food Not Bombs for a year. They've been videoing Food Not Bombs, and they've taken 6 Food Not Bombs people into court and threatening them with contempt of court citations and trials before a judge, not before a jury. And they're going to stack up consecutive 5-day sentences so they can put people in jail for long periods of time without a jury trial. That was temporarily derailed, in a somewhat amusing aside, when it was revealed that the judges in that case, their wives, had been weekly serving free food in another kind of operation which didn't have a permit. And so it seemed that all the judges would have to be disqualified because they would be prejudiced. Since they themselves were receiving criminal consommé or whatever they were getting from their wives at the free food serving that was benefiting the judges. Anyway, this Presidential Day event, this meeting of Food Not Bombs people, will be happening on the weekend of February 16th through 18th. And if you want information on that, give me a call at 423-HUFF or give a call to San Francisco Food Not Bombs at 415-386-9209, and you can get some information on that. Nothing further on the Java House. You may remember there was a demonstration December 26th about a couple and their son who were thrown out of the Java House because they bought a cup of coffee for a man outside who had been declared a pariah by the Java House, a person they would not serve. And we did a demonstration on the 26th supporting that couple's right to buy a cup of coffee for a guy outside. And the owners of the Java House, there have been rumors that they let people in again if you talk to them privately. If you've been excluded, they'll come and talk. You can come and talk to them and get back in. And I was going to do a mediation, compliments of activist Mushroomic, but that hasn't happened yet because Mushroomic has kind of disappeared, and that has not yet come about. That at least dialogue with the owners of the Java House. I heard they wanted to talk. I wanted to see how serious they were about letting people back in who were going to discuss whatever it was that created the so-called problem in the first place. I was looking for six basic rights for people around, not just the Java House, but other cafes such as amnesty for all problems are 6 months old or older, guaranteed kind of mediation. Where is my flyer on that issue? We've developed a few more. Let me run through some more. There was a set of posted rules would be nice. No more than a month. That's it. No more than a month's eviction for first offenders. A series of kind of guidelines that would allow cafes to, not give up their right to exclude people who are genuinely violent, disruptive, fraudulent, whatever, in their dealings with the coffee house, but also making it so that they cannot arbitrarily kick out people they don't like just for the hell of it or because they don't like their political views or the way they express themselves, as apparently the Java House has been doing, both with me, Wanton Dave, Mike Girth, a fellow called Dean, who called in last week, John and Leslie, this couple that aroused the wrath of the Java House by buying a cup of coffee for a man outside who they accused of being a bicycle thief, and who indeed a caller also accused of being a bicycle thief on the air, but she didn't stay on the air long enough to really get into an informed discussion on that, so I can't really comment on the merits of her accusations. I want to point out, kind of skipping back to the question of the open-air shelter campground issue, the Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, or the Cent Anal, the local county paper that comes out daily here in Santa Cruz County, has generally kind of boycotted or blacked out or avoided the issue of what the owners and the operators of the open-air shelter promised. I just got a note from battling Bob LaMonica saying hi. Thank you, Bob. The Sentinel has blacked out the essentially the wrongs of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless against the homeless, as well as the transgressions and protests, much of the information about the protests on the issue. And I've been trying to get that information in the Sentinel, at least the very simple information that they broke their word to the campers. They had a verbal contract, and they just simply violated it. They kicked everybody out, and that theoretically they could be sued and should be sued in small claims court for all the nights of tenancy that they promised people that the people could not get. And who knows, maybe some camper will do that, some ambitious camper, and I think that would be a very useful thing to do, even though I'm sure Scott Kennedy would disagree with me and say that means that no one will ever let a camper stay on his piece of property again. Something to that effect. I'm accused of ruining the climate for property owners to volunteer their property to campers because the main care provider for the homeless, who negotiated in supposed good faith with the homeless for 2 months, with Scott Kennedy standing by and watching the whole thing, broke its word. It's the campers, it's the activists who are to blame. You know, that's real clear thinking, Scott. Thank you so much. And that seems to be the city council thinking. That seems to be the Sentinel thinking, as we saw by the thumbs up today for Mayor Mike Rotkin, whose response to a perfectly reasonable proposal from Save Our Shelter looking for a campground for the people who are going to be coming out of the Armory and for the campers who are being essentially turned into internal refugees in this country is, you can't have any of our land. You know, it's as though they were somehow seeking to engage in squatter activity on land. You know, we're talking about actually saving the city and county money by stopping camping tickets, by stopping defecation and urination in places where there are no facilities, which is what happens now, because all we have is illegal camping in this county. All we have is illegal sleeping. Anyway, the Sentinel did not want to air these issues about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless breaking its contract, the November 29th promise of the Citizens Committee that the campers would not be evicted essentially until February, 10 days after January 1st, or 10 days after the permits for Community House were granted, which actually ran into February. And so theoretically, that campground should still be open, even as we speak, because there is still, there's six or seven more days until that 10-day period after the permit granting, which happened last Thursday, is over. Well, Sentinel has said nothing about it, and the only thing that's appeared on it is my letter, which finally showed up last Wednesday. And I mean, I was glad my letter showed up. I've been told my letter had been dumped, and I was distributing my letter as a flyer because I thought the Sentinel was not going to print it. But in its news stories, the Sentinel has printed nothing. Although last week they came up with a couple of stories after the City Council had done its little thing, in which they gave more money to Community House Trailers Not Trolls project, and no money to the open-air shelter situation. And we got a lot of empty promises from Mike Rotkin and kind of vitriolic rhetoric from Scott Kennedy. And some belated and half-hearted, I wouldn't even say half-hearted, some belated and uncarried through gestures. Not even gestures, actions, sure. I'll call them actions, from Councilmember Celia Scott, who wanted to set aside money for SOS. And I commend her for that. I mean, it sounds like she's getting fed up with nothing happening and wants to assure that something happens. And I mean, that's very good. And I might also add that Celia Scott has not returned phone calls to me in a month, but I'm told through a mediator that she will be returning phone calls to me, and I'm hoping that's the case. I put through a phone call this morning, and I hopefully will report to you next Friday when the show resumes to tell you if that phone call was returned. Celia Scott is probably the most liberal council member, but I've given her a lot of flack because she's also been up to now, and now is no longer, on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and she has said nothing about open-air shelter of any consequence. She has not supported a constant concern of myself and other campers that there not be an open-air shelter destroyed until there is adequate space, that there not be Community House trailers put down on the Coral Street open-air shelter property until there is another shelter for people to go to, or another campground, I should say. She's said nothing about this month after month, and she's also up to now, she was blocking discussion of this issue at the open-air shelter subcommittee. I mean, it was brought up and she would dismiss it and say, oh, that's not within the purview of our committee. We can't talk about that. You know, I think we can talk about whatever we want. And that committee could have put serious pressure on CCH to act otherwise, but they chose not to. And I treated that as a near conflict. I called it a conflict of interest with Celia, and I'm still not terribly happy about it. But I'm glad that at least I'm hearing her say other things. And maybe it's because she's no longer on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and now feels she can speak more freely. I don't know. I'd love to have her call in. Celia, if through some strange circumstance you're listening to this show, you are invited to call, as is anyone else. 427-3772, 427 Free Radio Santa Cruz. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. And we have the show every Monday and Friday. It usually goes from 10 to noon, and if we get more time, we take it, and that's what we're going to do right now. Since the next talk show hosts haven't come in, we're going to continue on the air. The next issue coming down the pike of some major interest, which I've discussed before, is the curfew. Even though Santa Cruz City Council has rejected a youth curfew, the county has not. In fact, 2 weeks ago, the county passed a curfew in principle and sent it on to the lawyers at the county council's office to hammer out the specifics of a county law, which would put it in line with Scotts Valley, Watsonville, and Capitola, for a uniform countywide curfew, making it illegal for young people to tarry, quote-unquote, after 11 o'clock at night until, I guess, 5 in the morning. Linda LeMaster, or Lighthouse Linda, as I call her, who's on the Above the Line Community Consortium Civil Rights Subcommittee with me. That's a group that's been concerned with youth shelter and other homeless problems. And the Above the Line gave, I don't know, $20,000 to $30,000 at least to Citizens Committee for the Homeless so they could run the Coral Street Open Air Shelter last summer. I think the money has finally reached the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. It was somewhat delayed. Anyway, we, LeMaster and I, had great trouble getting any input into this proposal to the Board of Supervisors, the curfew proposal. We wanted to talk to Sheriff Mark Tracy, who is the main man, apparently, behind this Terry after 11, get jacked up by the cops measure. And we actually have an appointment tomorrow to meet with Sheriff Tracy at 3 o'clock, and we'll be reporting back to you on what the impact of that meeting was. I called Supervisor Simons, who was probably one of the worst on the curfew. Currently, they have a 3-2 majority in favor of the curfew that looks pretty hard that we are probably not going to be able to break. Although I'd like to see some activism around it. I'd like to see people coming out, talking about it, flooding the city council chambers saying no, no, no. I'd like to see demonstrations of people under 18 tearing away after 11 o'clock at night. And that would be, of course, they would be at a demonstration, and therefore it wouldn't be illegal. Maybe that's the answer. Make sure that if you tarry, it's part of a demonstration. There are going to be all kinds of interesting problems with this law. But curfews are notoriously abusable by the police, and if you look anywhere near the age of 18, it becomes a blank check for cops to stop you, search you, interrogate you, harass you, and it puts you in a position where you actually have to carry ID, which, as we know in a free society, should not be required. Anyway, I'll be talking to Tracy tomorrow about this issue. I'm trying to get a hold of the San Jose ACLU. There was a very interesting woman in that office, very accessible, who was talking about San Jose, which has a similar curfew, a youth curfew, which has been in effect for about a year, and we're getting mixed reports from that. Of course, the police say it's wonderful, and the ACLU says that Hispanics are being jacked up right and left in disproportionate numbers, and that most of the people being jacked up are over the age of 18, and so it's being used as a pretext to jack people up whom the police want to talk to for other reasons. Well, there's a report from San Francisco by Katzenjammer Keith McHenry. Again, this is a Food Not Bombs activist who's been arrested literally dozens of times, beaten a half dozen times by police, went through a bullshit, phony mock trial. Actually, he never got to the trial stage. He was accused of multiple felonies for fundamentally giving away literature in City Hall when Mayor Frank Juggernaut Jordan was mayor. He gives us a report from San Francisco that Food Not Bombs this morning was marching with SEIU 250. That's a union protesting health care cuts at Hillhaven. Traffic was blocked in downtown San Francisco, and the police showed up late. There was one undercover cop, he noted. So he said that police are not under attack in San Francisco under the new Brown administration. And indeed, my attorney, Bedrock Beauvais, state-appointed attorney, has gone in to bat on my behalf, talking to the public prosecutor in San Francisco, asking that the prosecutor attempt to have the conviction overturned by simply declaring they will refuse to prosecute again. They wish they hadn't prosecuted in the first place for my serving free food. Again, for those of you who don't know, this was the only case that ever saw a trial in San Francisco of the 1,000 cases where there were arrests for serving free food in the last 8 years in the attempt of the San Francisco authorities to crush Food Not Bombs, which is a group that fights for a change in priorities nationally and locally and encourages homeless people and poor people to empower themselves and to take back their rights and to feed each other. I mean, you can't do much if you're without anything to eat, and also focuses on such issues as the waste in the food system, how food can essentially be used that is thrown away, and what is thrown away in a major American city can feed lots and lots of people. and how the priorities of the country are bombs, not food, and should be food, not bombs. Keith also informs me that the cops in San Francisco have not stopped their infamous Matrix program, that the curfew in Golden Gate Park is still on, and the stupid stuff against the homeless is still continuing, in spite of Willie Brown's new slick administration. Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out the newspaper Street Sheet in San Francisco, which is a fancier version of what was once the famous Santa Cruz Street Shit Sheet. I'd like to point out the Street Shit Sheet appeared before the Street Sheet, and who knows, it may again appear. I'm also looking for help with that newsletter, which I used to publish every month, and now I publish like every year and a half. Actually, I think I published the last one in November. The Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco is organizing a Poor People's Convention in April, 100 days after the inauguration. There is a planned national gathering of Food Not Bombs in Atlanta coming up this summer. And the Saturday San Jose Mercury News, I'm told, had a long story on Palo Alto Food Not Bombs, which apparently now doesn't need a permit. The police welcome Palo Alto Food Not Bombs. That was apparently the headline, according to Keith. Palo Alto Food Not Bombers, there were two younger women, girls, you might even say, because they were under the age of 18. They were arrested at San Francisco Food Not Bombs rally at Mission and 16th, and we were serving bagels and soup about 3 weeks ago. That was the day before the inauguration of Willie Brown. And it looked like the last hurrah of the Jordan administration, which went out with a bang, arresting and harassing Food Not Bombs folks. Have I been missing your phone calls? Because I don't want to miss them. I want to hear what you've got to say. And the phone lines are open, and it's 427-3772. I think what we're going to do now is play a little of a phone interview with John Malkin. John is the Citizens Police Review Board Commissioner, and he called me up this morning. He didn't want to be interviewed on the air, and I don't, unfortunately, have the text of what he told me, but I can kind of tell you. Citizens Police Review Board in Santa Cruz is a kind of a jokish effort to monitor the police. I do encourage people to continue to file complaints with them, because even though they won't go anywhere, they will be kept in a record. The record will be made. So that if you, a new talk show host has arisen, so much for my tape plan. I do encourage people to contact the Citizens Police Review Board. And more on that on Friday. If you're interested in the curfew, by the way, there is a big meeting coming up tomorrow night. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, from 7 to 9, at 1080 M-Line, which is where the all the services are, you know, the kind of the health services and the health and the human resources auditorium. There's going to be a debate on the youth curfew. I repeat, 7 to 9 tomorrow night, Tuesday, January 30th. You can be a part of this debate. It's probably worth going to press the issues, but more important, to meet other people who oppose this youth curfew, because the youth curfew is a real piece of bad news. And if anybody at the university is listening, you know, a lot of people at the university opposed this curfew and spoke against it at the Board of Supervisors. And I really wish that those of you who said you were going to come to the radio station and call in had done so, and indeed do so. And don't just do so in my show. There are plenty of DJs you can call who are interested in talking about these issues. I'm going to leave now because I'm over time. I would encourage you to give me a listen next time I come on. That's 10 to 12 on Friday, Bathrobes Piers Broadside. You want to be on the air, you give me a call at 423-HUFF. You want to volunteer to help me in terms of civil rights activities, give me a call at 423-HUFF. If you want to be on the air but you don't have a phone, can't panhandle a quarter, because after all, we don't want to violate the law after dark, right? Show up at Taco Bell downtown, a Pacific and Laurel Streets, and you'll be there at 9:45 on Friday morning, this coming Friday, and I'll put you on the air if you've got something to say about civil rights for the poor. And until that happens, you're going to have to call me on the phone here on the radio, 427-3772, and I'm going to now yield the mic to our upcoming host,
DJ Sly.
Who? DJ Sly. Yes. So that Mr. Sly is here.